Welcome to We Are Libertarians this week, as we come to you, what, a week and a half after we talked about the debates, and now we're going to take a look a little bit at what's going on locally, nationally, talk about some tech stuff maybe, talk about Sandy definitely, but my first question to you two is, what don't you get about Be Quiet, I'm playing the intro music? Not so much you, Galt, you. Mr. Happy over there.
Because you were doing something that was related to a movie, and I was referencing the same movie, and you weren't getting it.
Creighton's entire worldview is shaped by movies. And not even good movies, you know, like Hotel Rwanda.
Hotel Rwanda is not a good movie.
Important movies like Hotel Rwanda or Wag the Dog. It's like, you remember in Wayne's World when they said three... Two. Camera one, camera
whatever,
two.
Whatever. I've seen plenty of good movies.
I know. Oh, so how are you boys this week?
Pretty good.
Assassin's Creed 3 came out, so this is really just testing my will.
What is Assassin's
Creed? I can't believe you play that game. It's full of conspiracies.
All right.
I mean, the very beginning of the game says December 21st, 2012. It will be the end of the world.
It's also a video game.
Exactly. I'm not much of a video game player, and I don't. In my day, we were just starting to get Nintendo, regular Nintendo, and then starting to get Game Boy. And I remember when the Super Nintendo was introduced.
Oh yeah, Nintendo was amazing.
Did you guys, when you guys were toddlers, you probably had the square one, whatever that one was called. Nintendo 64 is the first one you might remember.
No, I had a Sega Genesis.
I had an SNES, and I had
SNES.
I had an N64, GameCube. I had Nintendo up until I got a PlayStation 3.
Give me just a little more energy, Creighton.
I got a Nintendo.
I had a PlayStation 1.
Yeah, so I remember 1988, 89 Christmas getting my Super Nintendo, and I've played Duck Hunt for years.
On the wall, it projected it on the wall. Yeah, with the shotgun, the orange shotguns.
Loved it. Yep. I never had that, but the only video game that I ever played intensely was one was GoldenEye and Max Payne. That was it.
GoldenEye.
I played GoldenEye with friends pretty intensely.
Yeah,
but when it came to video games, I played intensely. It was like all of them. I played Ocarina of Time so much. So much.
I just never got into video games. And all my friends played video games, so we'd all go over to my one friend, Brandon's house, and we'd just sit there, and I'd just be like, what the hell?
Mortal Kombat.
Can't we go find girls?
Guitar Hero, man.
How many days did I waste playing Mortal Kombat?
Guitar Hero. That was my high school.
The only thing I own now is a Wii.
A Wii?
Not even a new Wii. An old Wii.
You know.
A Wii is old.
You know Xbox?
Can you talk into the mic for me?
Do you know that Xbox is making a holodeck?
No.
Like from Star Trek, the holodeck? Or the Danger Room from X-Men?
Oh.
They're making a very similar thing where it's like the X, whatever that's called, the Kinect.
Yeah.
But it actually projects the game into your room. And it can even recognize like a sofa and project like a bush on it. And you actually play the game in the room.
Right.
They're making a straight up holodeck, dude. It's Star Trek times.
Bush. You, Mr. Technology.
What's up?
Chris Galt over here.
What's up?
Can you explain to me how Star Wars and, what, E.T., I think, and Indiana Jones and all the technology that George Lucas created, that's worth $4 billion, but Instagram is worth $1 billion?
Well, is it
any insight for me here?
I don't know. Is it just Lucasfilm or is it all of LucasArts, like Industrial Light and Magic and everything?
Oh, I think it's Lucasfilms is what I've heard. But I mean, I think maybe they bought George Lucas. Like he
sold himself a long time ago.
You nerds think that he ruined Star Wars. You just wait until Disney gets their hands on the next three movies, which are in production.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're doing
Star Wars
7 is a definite for 2015. They announced it, and they have plans for the two more after that.
Oh my gosh,
8, 9.
They're going in order though. They need to go like 10, 11, 12, and then make 7, 8, 9.
Well, maybe that's what they're doing. I don't know.
They're going to come out Star Wars 10
because they made 1, 2, and 3, but then they made the new 1, 2, and 3. So now we have the 4, 5, and 6, and then I don't know if this is the new 4, 5, and 6, or if it's the new 7, 8, and 9.
Whoa.
I need a calculator.
Either way, when Disney's kind of hit and miss with this, though, because I think I'm pretty sure they were in charge of the new Indiana Jones.
Yeah, and it was terrible.
It was terrible. But they're also in charge of all these new Marvel movies, which are kick-ass. So,
are they? Yeah, that's true. They only do two or three live-action movies a year now. I mean, the majority of what they still do is kids' movies. So, yeah,
but let's not imagine that Disney's still this like Mickey Mouse only kind of organization. They own ESPN. They own freaking
ABC.
Everything.
Yeah. I mean, and that's really their point of why they bought this is they want to diversify. They want to grow. So it's certainly interesting times. So, all right, that's our version of Nerd Chat. We do have an election in like 6 days, so maybe we ought to talk about politics.
Yeah, since maybe. This is, maybe a little bit.
So, since we last met, let's go to Chris Galt first. What has leapt out to you about this campaign season since we last talked?
Since we last talked?
Mm-hmm.
What's happened since we last talked?
Very insightful, Creighton.
Well, the East Coast is underwater.
Yeah, that's.
Oh, it
let's,
is.
Let's start with Sandy because that's the big news, and I'm kind of obsessed with it.
Well,
because
Romney quit his bus tour to go help out.
Yeah, this is a terrible, terrible joke, and I'm sorry if this offends you. It's not my intention. It's just to make you laugh. Someone wrote on Facebook: New York City dressed up as New Orleans for Halloween.
I'm offended.
It really, like, you're sitting there watching it. There was, I think, an inch or two of rain in New York City. There really was not that much rain. It didn't rain that long. But you have the high tides from the full moon, and then you have the wind patterns, and it was 14 feet of water in Battery Park right at the tip of Manhattan.
Well, isn't their subways underwater, right?
Subways are still underwater. They don't have a way to pump it out except for portable pumping units. So
you know what they should do is they should set up like a boat ride and make it be like the rides at Universal Studios.
The gondola. I didn't think
it's like that. It'll be like that ride Earthquake. Like, it'll be just right. The water comes through the walls and everything.
They didn't intend for it to be Venice, but yeah, I mean, it's really, you look at the stories, each one of these stories would be national breaking news. The crane, the 80 houses caught on fire on the tip of Queens, which is the same neighborhood where, if you remember, right after 9/11, where an airplane crashed and everybody was like, it's another terrorist attack, and it fell in Brooklyn. It just, like, an engine fell off the plane. This was the neighborhood. They lost 30 people in that neighborhood after 9/11. We're trying to be serious here. How dare you be so disrespectful with your jokes?
I'm sorry. My dad, after he heard this was coming, like after it was on the news for a while, my dad hates the East Coast.
Right.
If it's above the Mason-Dixon, he hates it.
Right.
And
okay, well.
He has been literally like,
yeah.
And he's just been jumping for joy. That he's like, get them all underwater. Get them off. They go in the Atlantic.
Seaside Heights, one of the greatest tragedies is in Seaside Heights, where the amusement park that Snooki frequently rides when she goes to Jersey Shore has been wrecked.
I will
it's
say
almost
I
underwater.
Am a little proud of that. I mean, I don't like saying that I'm happy with natural disasters. But if the Jersey Shore gets wiped off the face of the planet, I think Sandy has done a great service
to
mankind.
You're a compassionate
Oh, give me a break.
Dick.
Everybody on this planet except the 14-year-olds and the people that live on the Jersey Shore want the Jersey Shore to go away.
Maybe the Guidos, but I feel really bad for the people who lost their houses and their property. And you just look at the amount of destruction in this 1,500. I mean, people were killed in Haiti and all the way up to, I mean, heck, when you looked outside the day of landfall, what was that, Monday?
Yeah, Monday afternoon.
Yeah, Monday afternoon, I walk outside at 10 a.m. and I look, and there's the outer bands of a hurricane where the eye has not even touched land yet. I mean, it was a monster storm, massive waves in the Great Lakes. It's just once-in-a-lifetime type of occurrence for that area, and, man, it's just sad.
What's the property damage estimate?
So far, it's $20 billion. But,
$20 billion.
I mean, we're talking
50 people have died.
50 people. This is how many people died in Katrina? Wasn't it like 800?
I don't know.
I mean, the
was
number
800.
I thought it was 800.
It may have been.
But
I don't know.
It was pretty significant. You know, they're far. Politicians are far quicker to get on the air and say, you will die if you don't get out of the path of the storm. You know, the last time the National Weather Service had one of these statements where literally, if you don't leave, you're going to die. The last time was Katrina. And they put one out, I don't know if you saw it on Gawker, the statement from one of the National Weather Service in New Jersey. He was like, you need to GTFO.
I will say, Chris Christie, I'm not a big supporter of much of what he does, but I will say that his tact, mm-hmm. I do kind of like his tact sometimes.
Right.
So he got on the press conference, and he's like, don't be stupid, all right? Get out of here. I was like, yes. That was brilliant.
Yeah, he's like, I don't give a crap about partisan politics. Mitt Romney can go shove it. Let's talk about Chris Christie, because he sort of lit off a firestorm here, and he praised Barack Obama 7 days before an election, and he's a Republican, and he was on record at the convention saying that we have some failed leadership by Barack Obama. We need better leadership in this country, and we need to get rid of him. And then yesterday he comes on television and he says, you know, Obama has shown good leadership through this. He's been, available and has given us everything that we've needed. Do you guys find that to be hypocritical?
Can we even separate politicians from hypocrites anymore? I mean, I don't know. If Obama, I mean, it seems like he said that Obama was responsive to the governor's requests or something, and I don't know exactly what his reason was, but if Obama answered his phone call and that's what he's talking about, I guess you can't call him a hypocrite. But I like how I do kind of get upset how all these politicians are like basically using it to up their, you know, credibility rating and mm-hmm. their favorability rating, and it's like all you did was sit there and call people, hey, set the emergency system up, or
right,
declare a state of emergency, and it's all like the firefighters and, you know, FEMA.
Yeah.
To an extent.
1,800 people died in Katrina, by the way. 1,800. So 1,500 in Louisiana. I mean, what have your thoughts been on politicians during Katrina?
During Katrina?
During now. I mean, sorry. Thank you.
I don't know.
What's wrong with you today?
I don't know.
Are you all right?
Yeah, I didn't even know about Sandy till 2 days before it.
I think he's upset because we were supposed to talk about something
else today. And then I discovered about it by that fake Statue of Liberty picture.
I was
like, what? That's a hurricane?
It looked like Independence Day.
So that's when I started looking stuff up about it. And it wasn't even a real picture.
I posted this stupid photo on Monday of like the Marshmallow Man.
Yeah, I know, that was great.
Like Godzilla behind the Statue of Liberty. And I'm just like, it gets 3,300 shares as of yesterday afternoon. I'm like, what have I got to do to, like, I can't get anybody to pay attention to politics or the, you know, the
You got 3,300 shares on a picture?
On a picture.
Oh, my gosh.
Almost 1,000
Did you make
likes.
It?
I didn't make that, it. That, oh. I no, stole pic, it, like everything picture, else on the internet.
That picture went around like crazy.
I know.
It was all over Twitter. Reddit went, nice. Ate it up, and they're the ones who figured out it was a fake.
I am not a content creator, Chris Gold. I am a content distributor.
Okay.
So.
No, yeah, that was a funny picture.
I look at it, and I am actually, I commend a lot of these, I commend Chris Christie especially for not trying to use this as a partisan thing for the presidential election. You know, it was Fox and Friends. Fox and Friends was trying to help. They were like, so you're having Barack Obama come out on Wednesday to tour the damage. Are you going to have Mitt Romney come out and have a photo op with you as he surveys the damage? And he's like, no. The last thing I give a crap about right now is presidential politics. He can go shove it. I'm like, all right, kudos. Because that's exactly like Mitt Romney called the head of FEMA. And I just sit there and go, if I'm the head of FEMA, the last person I need to talk to right now is Mitt Romney, because there's nothing he can do for me. He just wants to say he called me. You know, it just seems like a waste of time.
Are there any legitimate talks of moving back Election Day? Or is that just kind of like, oh, it could happen?
It could happen, but there's no provision in the laws to push back Election Day in a lot of these states. And so what they think they're going to do is they're going to take it by a county-by-county, precinct-by-precinct basis. You know, when we talk about destruction, we're talking about, you know, precincts along the coast where they could do printed ballots. we're not talking about the entire state of New Jersey is destroyed. So there's going to be a lot of difficulty in these coastal areas, and they don't really have, you know, in Delaware and Rhode Island and Connecticut, a lot of any provisions for pushing back the election. So there's a 99% chance that the election will go on as prescribed, and they'll just do it with paper ballots. They won't do it with electronic machines.
How insane. I made this comment in my class the other day. How literally insane would it be if, because there's such a, they're talking about how close it is,
mm-hmm.
and they're thinking it could be another tie, close to a tie.
Right.
And what happens when they start doing paper ballots because of this, and it comes down to one state, like New Jersey or something.
Right.
And they're going over all the ballots, and they're like, that one didn't punch his hole out all the way, but this one did. This one doesn't count. Just like 2000.
I'm just going to go out on a limb and say the swing vote's not going to come in New Jersey.
Well, I'm just saying. Like, my point is that
Frank Wutz is
flouting.
How
crazy would it be if it is that... It is that exact thing again.
Have you ever seen Swing Vote with Kevin Costner?
No.
You should see Swing Vote with Kevin Costner. It comes down to his vote because they found out that he's the one person in the U.S. that did not vote correctly in some election. And so the Republican and the presidential candidates come out and like try to get them to vote for him. And he is the single person that decides the entire election. So it's actually a pretty funny movie. So, all right. Any other thoughts about Sandy before we move on?
Oh well, what do you think happens if in the aftermath of the election, if like FEMA or the Red Cross is helping quote people to the polls? What do you think the loser is going to do?
Let's talk about FEMA and its existence, because Mitt Romney was asked 14 times yesterday, "Do you believe that FEMA should exist? Would you defund FEMA? Should you be elected?" And his campaign put out a statement saying, "We believe that." Help should be done at the state and local levels. It should be coordinated by the state, and the federal government should help coordinate activities where needed. He didn't outright say that he would abolish FEMA, but as libertarians, would libertarians get rid of FEMA, and how would it work without a federal organization coordinating efforts?
I don't know. Probably would have gotten water to the Superdome quicker.
Chris Galt?
Libertarians would definitely get rid of FEMA, or at least I would if I was a libertarian, which I am.
this show is called We Are Libertarians. So if you're not a libertarian, we are 25 episodes in. We are libertarians.
All right.
and Chris Galt. That's what we'll name the show.
There, I could easily see private ways to address natural disaster issues with private funding. There are millions of dollars donated in Katrina to private organizations.
Right.
It's just the same thing. FEMA is just taking money from me and you to mm-hmm. fund it instead of voluntary. And that's what the Choose Charity thing YL's doing this month is about.
Right.
You know, choose to give your money to people that need it. Not let them take it by force, I guess.
That's been one of the biggest questions that I hear out on the campaign trail is, how would you, if you got rid of entitlements, what would we do as a society? And the answer is that the less money the government takes out of the economy, the more money there is to put into our paychecks. And human beings, but Americans especially, are not going to look at human suffering and just say, oh, well, I mean, some will, but some already do.
Right.
The majority of people look at what's going on the East Coast right now and say, I want to help in some way. If I had the skills or the time or the ability, I would be out there on the first plane. If they asked. Most people would show up right now and they'd say, please don't help. Get out of here. You're going to get hurt. And then we're just going to have to rescue you. But, you know, I think Americans are giving people. And when you look at private charity versus public charity has less accountability.
Does that make sense?
And it has people.
Public charity.
Public
make sense.
Public entitlements. Let's call it that. Okay. When you do quote unquote charity with tax money. You basically just cut a check on April 15th, and then you never follow up with what goes on with that money. With a private charity, you have the ability to call the executive director, to call the board, to call the people that run the programs and find out what's being done with your money, because they naturally want you to donate more so they can expand their programs. And there are a lot of watchdog organizations to watch what's going on with dollars. So charity and helping people will not go away if the government is not involved.
Yeah, and I hear the argument from a lot of my liberal friends, or I guess you might not be able to call them friends, but liberal acquaintances, they see it, you have to help people. You have to help people, and the only way to do that is through the government. So right. If you don't pay taxes, you're immoral because you don't help those people. And I think it's just as immoral to take the money from people in the first place. So that's what I try to explain to them. Most of them don't get it, but
and a lot of times these are the first things cut, as opposed to military spending.
I read this one of the episodes in the past, but it's relevant. It's a quote from Penn Jillette. It's amazing to me how many people think that voting to have the government give poor people money is compassion. Helping poor people, poor and suffering people yourself, is compassion. Voting for our government to use guns to give money to help poor and suffering people is immoral, self-righteous, bullying laziness. People need to be fed, medicated, educated, clothed, and sheltered. If we're compassionate, we'll help them. But you get no moral credit for forcing other people to do what you think is right. There's great joy in helping people, but no joy in doing it at gunpoint.
Exactly. And when the government is the one that is the front runner or the point person for providing relief to people in need, it makes our citizenry lazy.
It really shows. I mean, if you just imagine the person who is saying that, I'm going to, if the government's going to be helping out poor people, then it's really kind of like they're just, all right, I cut my check, now leave me alone. They don't really give a crap about the person.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, the people who actually voluntarily give money, they do care.
Right.
And all we're doing is saying that, we'll have a society of people who don't care, and they hate the fact that they have to give money. Oh, it's a chore.
Right.
Whereas, charity is something that people enjoy doing, which is why they do it.
And the nonprofit sector is one of the fastest growing sectors of the economy. And by every measure, every study done on the millennial generation, our generation is one of the most giving generations. One of, if it doesn't have a global impact, oftentimes we don't want to do it. We want to make a difference in the world in a positive way. And why wouldn't you want to take advantage of that good nature and empower nonprofits to do what's right? And people listening will say, well, listen, I'm stretched. Hey, guys, I'm stretched at the end of my rope. $20 is a lot to me. I can't give away that extra $20. Well, imagine a world where we didn't have to inflate our currency to pay for all of these programs that we can't afford that just grow, suck more money out of the economy, and give less services. Why don't we reform our entire system, reform our economic system, end the Fed, start to dwindle down a lot of these entitlement programs, and it puts more money back in your pocket.
Yeah. Create prosperity for the regular person.
Exactly. So it's not a bad system. We tried it a long time ago, and it worked, and then we've tried it the other way for 100 years. So.
Yeah, well, Alexis de Tocqueville, when he came through America, I mean, that was one of the biggest things he stressed, was how no matter what person in America at the time, they all felt it was their moral duty to give to charity, and that they were giving people. And this is back in the 1800s. And as time has progressed, we've given that duty to the state, and all they've done is politicize it. And now it's just become an issue where the poor people aren't people who need help anymore. They're votes.
Right.
And we have to use these programs to give. We have to use these programs in order to get certain parties into power, and we have to reform them in ways that make it so the poor people they want to vote for my guy more.
And these government handouts are used to manipulate through fear to get votes, and that's despicable.
Absolutely. I mean, you talk about Mitt Romney does not say that FEMA should be the biggest organization in the government. Therefore, that means it must be privatized, and if it's privatized, then the big bad corporations are going to take all the money from the people who need disaster relief. I mean, that's literally the logic these people follow. I mean, when there's no altruism in having the state be your donator.
And then on the other hand, it's I don't know what I was going to say. Well, this kind of brings up, to shift gears, a discussion about conservation. And Chris Galt was showing me a photo before the show, and hopefully he'll post that up on our Facebook page.
Yeah, definitely.
So go check it out at wearelibertarians.com. That'll take you to the Facebook page. and check it out. It is this photo of the border between Haiti and the Dominican Republic. The Dominican Republic and Haiti share an island, basically, and it's sort of like Goofus and Gallant. The Dominican Republic is part of America, and the Haitians are struggling, and they have basically forever. So the photo basically on the Dominican Republic side shows this beautiful, lush green forest, and on the Haitian side, it's just grass and hilly grass and a few trees. Can you tell us more about the photo, Chris?
I actually, my professor brought this up in our econ class because we were talking about market failures. And one of the externalities he talked about was the environment. And he showed this picture. And he said, Haiti has no regulations on environmental things, on the forests. So whoever owns the forest can just tear down all the trees and build whatever they want out of the wood. But the Dominican Republic protects their forests. And that's, and you look at the difference in it. All of the environmental people in class are like, wow, we definitely need regulations in government to protect the environment. So I wanted to bring that to you guys and see how, in a libertarian society, I guess, how no regulations could still protect the forest or the environment, I guess. Or if you have any thoughts on this picture with Haiti and the Dominican
Republic. I don't know the particulars of Haiti's governmental setup. But I know
it's called a mess. Okay. That's what it is. Well, it's called an absolute disaster.
There's the age-old tragedy of the commons, where if you don't allow private ownership of a particular area, then you still allow people to use it with no regulation, then they'll just tear it apart. It's been predominant. They always talk about how the farmers using grazing sheep and the commonly owned plot of land will end up being barren with no grass. But if you allow them to own the land, then there will be grass. There's historical examples with things like during out west and federally owned land out west that happened with cattle grazing. But it comes down to the fact that if there is no incentive, for someone to restrict their use of a resource because other people will come in and use it anyway. And if you have allowed private ownership, then there is an incentive to restrict the use of a resource beyond its possible maximum and conserve it to an extent. That way you can use it longer. And that's just, for the most, unless you're like Malthusian or something, for most part, economists agree that this is a legitimate, almost undeniable fact about, the incentive structure of an economy. So I would be interested to know whether or not Haiti allows private ownership of that land or if they just allow people to use it regardless of ownership.
Right, because part of the problem with that photo is that it may just be general use land. Anybody can use it, and it's not privately owned. And, there was an example of this here in Indiana. Governor Ed Whitcomb just donated a piece of property to the state of Indiana. It's right on the Ohio border. It's valued because it's got a special tax structure at just a little under $1 million. But if it were developed, it's right on the bank of the Ohio River. It's about eight or 18. One of those two numbers jumps out at me. But it's a fairly decent-sized piece of property that the governor owns and has owned since forever. And he just donated it to the state of Indiana for whatever use, because he wants it protected. He wants it put into trust, basically. So here's a person who cares about a piece of property that he owns, that he wants conserved, and he has a couple options. One was donating it to the state, or he could have kept it into a trust and had private use land. He went the state route, but he is a Republican, and that's usually what they do. Or he could have kept that, in a private trust and as a foundation, essentially, for conservation.
On a more fundamental level, the issue brings up a point of, if we allow private ownership of the land, then, there could be the possibility that people don't want to conserve land for, keep forests the way they are. People will cut down the redwoods and stuff if they own it. That is a legitimate possibility.
Right.
But the question becomes, is it really – whose value is more important over a piece of land? Is it really the people who don't even live there that are voting in people into, the California legislature to say, I don't even live near the redwoods. I don't own any property out there. I don't I just don't want people to cut down these trees because they're important because I say so? Or is it the guy who legitimately lives there? Because at the same hand, you could also bring up that, well, if people believe that these are important, then there's likely people who will buy them. Because if let's put it this way. Let's say somebody wants to buy the redwood, a part of the redwoods, for the fact that he could cut down the logs that have been there for thousands of years. And that's a lot of wood. That's a lot of timber. That's a lot of profit.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same hand, if there's a lot of people in America who apparently there are because they're voting in people that need to protect the environment, then those same people have just as much ability to bid up the price of the land, buy it from them, and just let it sit. And
right.
Just for the fact that it's historical.
And
there would be private organizations that would do that anyway. And there's plenty of organizations that do things like that that are private, that buy up pieces of land or historical things just so they can keep them the way they are.
And people like 3M and Johnson & Johnson release commercials all the time talking about how green they are. Because it is good for their bottom line to show people that a chemical company or a company that makes, you know, products like Band-Aids and makeup and things like that are environmentally friendly. Because it's good for their bottom line. It's good because the majority of the people in this country like conservation. And it helps them sell products when they show that they will conserve. And there aren't any laws that force them to do a lot of these things, but it helps their bottom line. So, you know, the world, it sounds, oh, well, this is just all sounds very greedy. But the world runs on self-interest. And if you have, just like Creighton said with that state legislator in California, if you have no self-interest in a property, then you're just not going to care as much. And so you have less oversight. You know, it's not about greed. It's about passion for causes that you care about. So, you know, and you look at a lot of the Eastern Coast, this is all private property that will be rebuilt because people want to rebuild their homes. They want to rebuild their beaches. And a lot of it will be done with private insurance money.
Yeah. So I have a little more info about the Haiti thing.
Okay.
In 1923, Haiti had 60% of their land was forested. And in 2006, less than 2% was. So that's a pretty drastic change, but I found a reason behind it that isn't exactly because of deregulation. In 1804, they won their independence from France, but France said that they had to pay them $21 billion.
Right.
So to pay that money, they cut down the trees and sold it to France.
Right.
And that's why they had to cut down most of their forests. That's the only resource they had. It's the only resource they really had, so that's what they had to use to sell to France.
Am I just being a stereotypical American when I say snooty French or anyone who was ever colonized by the French? I mean, like, if you win your independence from France, you don't pay them money. No, you want independence. Get out of here.
Here's a country, a tiny island with not a lot of people, a former island that, you know, it was a former slave trading stop. It's the West Indies. That's what they talk about during the slave trade. They have nothing. And $21 billion, what year was it?
1904.
1904. Adjusted for inflation, that's billions.
That's probably in the trillions.
What are you doing with your microphone over there? Sorry, listeners.
Sorry.
We're not professional broadcasters. We do apologize. That is why they have been perpetually poor. That's why that's one of the reasons the Dominican Republic is also wealthy and the Haitians are poor. We basically colonized the Dominican Republic and they, you know, there's always talk about them getting citizenship and they get all the benefits of being an American citizen without paying taxes, by the way. Bitter.
Can we do that?
No. Sovereign citizens. Yes, we can.
That's
right.
We'll talk about that someday.
Someday when we're ready.
I would rather be a colony
under that.
I'm ready. Listen, I'm ready for the discussion. I'm just not ready for the fight. So the Haitians, though, bought their freedom, and they basically enslaved themselves to poverty for the next 100 years, and it's at the hands of the French.
Yep.
Another reason the French are dirty.
I hate the French.
You know who colonized Canada and turned it into what it is today?
French.
The French.
But be careful because they also colonized much of northern Indiana and the northeast. So
I saw Argo.
I take that back. They colonized much of what is now Indiana, and then after the French and Indian War, it became British.
I would just like to make a comment on the Canadians, by the way. I went and saw.
I'm ready for
it. I went and saw Argo. Okay, and you know these are the Canadians. Basically, it's an enlightening movie. All right, it starts out with basically the message of the United States and Great Britain and other Western countries destabilized and overthrew the Iranian government after they took control of their own oil rights. So then they instituted the Shah of Iran, who basically just was a horrible person. And eventually their citizens rose up, and that's how Khomeini got in charge, and that's sort of led to the Iranian revolution of what we have now still.
It is.
And so it starts out with showing our blowback, and then they compound it because they the movie basically these six people run out of the Iranian embassy, and the majority of the people get caught, and that's the hostage situation for over 400 days that led to Reagan getting reelected. And then six of them run to the Canadian ambassador's house. Well, a couple points. First, anybody notice that nobody hated the Canadians? They all hated the Americans and raided their embassy, but nobody did crap to the Canadians. Okay, first point. Just think about that as you watch the movie. The second point is the CIA creates a fake movie that basically gets all this press, and this is a legitimate thing that actually happened, and they perpetrate a fraud on the American people to get six people out of there. But then when they get back, the Canadian government and everybody, all the Canadians take credit for it. That is bullcrap. Again, I say Canadians just are riding on the coattails of the greatness of America. 98% of them live on the border, and at some point, they're going to come in here and they're – I mean, have you ever gone out for Canadian food? No. Exactly.
Canadian bacon's pretty good, though.
Canadian bacon is ham. That's circular
renamed.
Ham. It's good. Renamed.
Renamed it's ham.
It's good.
Other than Michael J. Fox, name me one great Canadian artist.
Rush.
Michael Bolton? Hello.
Jim Carrey.
Getty Lee?
Yeah.
Get
off my phone.
Rick Moranis. John Candy.
All right, I'll give you John Candy. Artist, great comedian. Artist?
Well.
Pissed off at the end of that. I was like, Canadians taking credit for everything.
I don't even remember what we were talking about.
Even though I was equally mad at the American government for perpetrating a fraud and for interventionism, I was just as mad at the Canadian government for taking credit for things that they don't
need. Before we go off too far, I would like to make one more point about environmentalism.
All right.
It's a common quarrel that people bring up against libertarianism is our lack of regulation implies a lack of regulation on the environment, and if there's no regulation on the environment, then we'll all be in Mad Max world and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
But the problem is a true libertarian society would be much more stringent on environment than the society we have now. Essentially, if you have private property rights, then if anyone hurts you or your property, you have grounds to sue them or get recompense for your property, mm-hmm. your body or your property. So these arguments that externalities of business are, you know, they'll drop toxic waste in the lakes and then people will get sick, that can't happen in a libertarian society without there being justice, because that hurts people and their property. If the business owns the property and it ends up hurting somebody else's property, that's still their problem that they have to fix. So what we've done in today's society is say, well, you can pollute, but only this much.
Right.
Whereas the libertarians say, you can't pollute at all if it's going to hurt somebody. So don't pollute.
But that's assuming that people or everything is owned.
Yeah.
I mean,
a libertarian society.
How could you own the ocean?
Well, we have GPS. It'd be pretty easy.
Yeah?
Mark off.
So we would sell the ocean?
Why not?
Okay. Just
as long as the Canadians don't get
it. It would probably help the fishing problem.
There is a serious plastics problem in the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
In that current over, I don't even know what it's called, but they're fishing out more plastic than plankton.
Yeah.
And the fish are eating it, and they're all dying.
Yeah.
Not to mention that they're just overfishing in general, because there's no way of doing fishing rights other than saying the government gets to do it.
Okay.
And if you allow people to own, I mean, it would be really easy.
If you get Chilean sea bass at a restaurant, you're an idiot, because that is basically tilapia. Because the Chilean sea bass doesn't even exist anymore, really. If you get Chilean sea bass at a restaurant, it's tilapia.
Dude, how do you go, we go from talking about the environment, and you just jump on some,
because
some
I have
beef you have with fish from some other country?
Because the damn Chileans, let
it's
me get
totally,
off of this for a second.
Oh my God. No, we don't need to talk about Chileans.
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 Chile.
Chile.
No, we don't need to talk about that.
Okay.
We can go on. But that is my point.
Well, one last fact about the Haitian thing, right. Since we might as well wrap that up. In 1954, Hurricane Hazel went through there, wiped out a lot of their forest as well. So they've just had a real bad luck of 150 years of bad luck.
The earthquake a few years ago, it just,
yeah.
As soon as
hey, a lot of that was their fault, though, because they don't know how to build buildings.
Yeah.
My dad got so mad at that. It's like, we got to help these people out. It's their own damn fault. They didn't put rebar in their concrete.
That's sort of how I feel about people who are stuck on the roof on Staten Island. It's sort of like, guys.
Why didn't you leave?
Why didn't you leave? And then you've got emergency personnel who have family who feel obligated and tortured about not going to get you. But
yeah, but
you
then
were
they
told
put
to
themselves
leave.
At risk when they go back to get you.
Right. Bunch of. Never mind.
Just all right, what else?
Canadians, I know it.
I will grant your Canadian argument, because isn't Michael Moore?
Michael Moore is a Canadian.
He is,
yes.
Isn't he?
No, actually, I think he's from Flint.
That's right, he is.
We'll
from
make
Flint.
Him an honorary Canadian.
He's almost, Michigan's almost Canada.
He's heavy
though.
And pale.
Michigan's almost Canada.
Do we want to talk about, wrap this up with the election?
What?
This podcast.
That old gag.
Do we want to make some election predictions?
Yeah, let's
or
talk about
something
the,
like that?
Let's actually talk about the Electoral College, because ooh. Here's my prediction. Okay, I'm going to predict the presidential race. All right, and I say this as an individual, and I am not speaking as a party official. Okay, everybody got that? Write that down.
Got it.
All right.
What?
I think that...
He took his Libertarian Party hat off.
Right. I think that Gary Johnson first, let's start with him, which, by the way, check out Nouveau. Nouveau put him on the cover with Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. They've never done that before. So it was very cool, equal treatment. I don't know what he's dressed up as, but...
I know. What was that?
I think maybe Dorothy? I'm not sure.
It wasn't even close to Dorothy.
So
maybe the wizard. Maybe it was the wizard.
Yes. A munchkin.
That's what he's dressed up as.
He's a munchkin.
He's a munchkin.
Ah.
We figured it out. So
is it really equal treatment? Because Obama was the cowardly lion and Romney was
the one without
man.
The heart.
The one without the heart.
Okay.
No. So listen. I'll take what I can get. I think Gary Johnson's going to hit 5%. So if you hit 5% in the presidential race, you're entitled to funding from when you pay your taxes and you can voluntarily check off the little $3 box for presidential elections. Well, that's public financing. Okay, it's totally voluntary. It's not an involuntary thing. So I don't personally have a philosophical problem with it. And the way that they used to do it until Barack Obama killed this system was the Republicans and the Democrats would basically use public financing and it'd cap out at $90 million. Well, Barack Obama and Mitt Romney are going to spend like $3 billion. So they got out of the public financing system, so they have no rules and no caps. Well, there's hundreds of millions of dollars just sitting in an account, basically. And when Gary Johnson hits 5%, he will get access to public financing. So instead of running a campaign for $1 million, $2 million this time, $93 million in 4 years. And I think it's very possible that Gary Johnson hits that 5% mark across the nation, and then it's game on. Because with $93 million, he's going to be in the debates. Because they'll just run TV ad after TV ad after TV ad.
Wait, he gets it?
His campaign gets it.
His campaign gets it.
Well, he doesn't personally like get 92
so,
million,
so,
but his campaign
well, I mean,
committee would.
So, obviously it's too late this time around. So the assumption is he'll run again in 2016.
Let me rephrase this so I'm clear. The $93 million would go to the Libertarian Party nominee in 4 years. So after
they're nominated,
they would get it.
Okay.
But Gary Johnson has intentions of running again in 4 years.
Okay.
And I can't imagine that he wouldn't get renominated, because I've heard nothing but good things from libertarians of all varieties about Gary Johnson, except for, the people who we could run their ideal candidate and they'd still find something wrong with him.
Right.
So I think Gary...
You mean Bob Barr wasn't a good candidate?
He just put his Libertarian Party hat back on, so he can't answer that question.
So, I think that it comes down to Ohio or Florida, but probably Ohio, which is why you see Romney in Ohio all the time.
And Romney buying the voting machines. And
I could completely see the scenario where we have a 2000 election where one of them wins the popular vote and the other one wins the electoral vote.
Which would be cool. I'm not going to lie. I like the Constitution at work.
Defend the Electoral College for... Now, let's say this happens, okay? This is in the Constitution, and our friends, the listeners, will get a lot of questions about why the Electoral College exists. So let's talk about the Electoral College, why it exists, and is it relevant to 2012? Let's start with Creighton.
Absolutely. It exists because America is full of idiots. And that's exactly what the founders would have said, but they would have said it in much nicer words.
Okay.
And
details.
Well, I mean, if you look at the structure of the Constitution, the House of Representatives is the shortest term candidate, and it's also the only one directly elected by the people at the time of the signing of the Constitution.
It is supposed to reflect the passions of the voting public.
And it's supposed to change with their passions, which is why it's only 2 years rather than six or four.
And the president
is not directly elected by the people, but the electors are kind of reflective of the people. But they don't have to vote the way the people want to vote, and that's how the founders set it up.
I am personally an elector for Gary Johnson, so should Gary Johnson win Indiana, I would be one of the electors, one of 11, and then there's 11 alternates, so 22 libertarians altogether that would go to Washington, D.C. and elect Gary Johnson as president for the
Joe
state of
Joe Biden up there at the top and all that kind of
stuff.
And then the Senate was supposed to be indirectly elected by the people as well, because the state legislators were elected by the people, who then elected the senators.
Senate. Right.
But that's not how it goes anymore because of the 17th Amendment.
Because of socialists.
Because
look at the
because of stupid idiots.
Go look at Eugene Debs and the Socialist Party platform of 1908. This was one of their first platform planks. The Senate is supposed to be the opposite of the House. It is supposed to not reflect the passions.
It is literally supposed to reflect. It's supposed to be the vanguard of the states.
It slows, yes, and it slows down progress and makes government slower and harder and more reflective.
But do I think the Electoral College should exist? Absolutely. Because the Electoral College, I mean, nowadays it's almost, I mean, it doesn't really reflect, I think, what the founders really intended. After Jackson... Andrew Jackson kind of started saying that the electors need to reflect the president, that they need to reflect the voting public. They need to essentially just be a buffer, and they pretty much just do what the voting public already did. But nevertheless, having a buffer between the people and the president, I think, is absolutely necessary because, and I saw a really good quote, and it's from a movie that doesn't really seem relevant, but it's a really good quote. It's from Men in Black. Tommy Lee Jones.
See?
Oh, wow. I swear to God. It's a good one, though. Tommy Lee Jones telling Will Smith, he says, a person is smart, but people are stupid, scared, and chaotic, and you know it.
Right.
And that is absolutely true, because people in mass are dumb.
So what you were saying is that if Fred Phelps, head of the Westboro Baptist Church, were to get the nomination of some party, probably, I don't know what party, let's say he ran as independent, because I won't throw that label on anybody, and he happens to get 52% of the vote somehow, and Fred Phelps is about to become the president of the United States, the Electoral College acts as a guard to go in and say, no, this is asinine. We're not going to cast our vote as electors for Fred Phelps, head of the Westboro Baptist Church. I'm sorry. You're all idiots. Well,
I mean, just because we got to understand, the founders didn't like democracy. I mean, I don't know how many times people have to say it and get it through everybody's head. Democracy is not intrinsically the greatest system in the world. It's one of the worst. Direct democracy. We have a system set up where a supreme law dictates what the government can and can't do, and people represent people to go and do what they can within those guards. That is not a democracy. That's a republic. A democracy is essentially the people decide on every particular issue whatever they want. There is no restriction. And so this like infatuation Americans tend to have with democracy, that if it reflects the majority of the people, it's therefore somehow moral. I mean, we have to get past this. I hate to go there, but Hitler was elected through a straightly through democratic means.
Right.
The people voted Hitler in. So just because it's democratic doesn't make it right. And we need to get past this. And do I think that we should have guards against the people ruling by majority rule? Absolutely. I'm 100%. We need more. We need more than we already have.
So your thoughts on the Electoral College, Chris Galt?
Well, I hear going to a college campus, I feel like this new generation is really against the Electoral College. All the time I hear about how we need to get rid of this and change this system. And I was thinking about it, and it does seem to make it harder for third parties to get in, because you don't win a state, you don't even get one electoral vote. Gary Johnson won't get one, probably. He probably won't get any. But anyway, Mo Rocca, you know who that is?
Yeah, one of the OGs from The Daily Show.
Yeah, he's...
For all of you older people listening, OG stands for original.
He's producing, or he already produced a movie, a documentary called Electoral Dysfunction. And he actually interviewed a bunch of people at IUPUI about it, a bunch of law professors. But he's coming back with the movie next semester to show it at school. I've only seen the trailer. It seems like it's talking about how your vote doesn't count at all. So it's probably pretty left-leaning. But hopefully...
He has horn-rimmed glasses, you think?
Yeah, so hopefully, I don't know, maybe that'll get some discussion going about it on campus. But I wish we had another resource to show other points of view on that topic.
And maybe when he comes to campus, y'all could have in defense of the Electoral College.
I would be interested to see, rather than just get rid of the Electoral, because I'd say that it doesn't have as much of an effect on third parties directly. I think what it really does is lack of proportional representation. I think the reason that third parties are so viable in other countries is because they proportionally represent rather than first past the post.
Right.
And therefore you can get third parties, because if a third party gets 5% of the vote, he gets 5% of the people out of that state, or the 5% of the electors or whatever. He gets 5% of representation from that state. If he gets 50%, he gets half. So it allows for third parties to be much more viable. I would be okay with that. I of course would not be okay with, bigger state and whatnot, but I would be interested to see how that would work in America.
America.
Of course it would have to be through constitutional amendment for it to be okay, but nevertheless, I think it would be...
Let's just executive order that crap.
I think it would be interesting.
My view on the Electoral College is that should there be some sort of Electoral College crisis this time, we will see a major movement to abolish it. And I think it would be bad, first of all, because of what Creighton talked about, because it is a buffer, because we are not a democracy, we're a republic, and we just have democratic values, small d. And one of the reasons there will be a movement to get rid of it over the next few election cycles and, basically until they kill it, is because right now campaign spending, which is a multi-billion-dollar industry, is focused on just a few states. It's just focused on the swing states like Pennsylvania, Ohio. Wouldn't it be great if all of these campaign consultants could expand their business model to include all 57 states and show ads everywhere? And, gee, they just happen to know a lot of politicians who could make that happen. So I think economics is one of the – and I saw someone who works in the political consulting industry, and I guess I would include myself in that kind of $8 billion this year will be spent on Halloween costumes and candy. Why – tell me again why $3 billion is too much to spend on elections. I mean – I want another Snickers, but I do not want another Murdoch Donnelly ad. there is a market for Halloween. There is not a market for more politics, and it doesn't actually.
There absolutely is.
The only thing on TV right now is political ads.
It doesn't help inform the voter. It helps misinform the voter. And,
Donnelly's attack on Murdoch.
Yeah.
His new one about
the
rape.
Have we talked about that? No, we do need to talk about that. I can't believe we haven't gotten to that.
I mean,
so we'll get to that after
this.
Ridiculous,
though.
But that's, I mean, there's not really a want or a desire in the marketplace for more of this crap other than from politicians who want to sling mud. And they only do it because the other guy does it, so they feel they have to raise the money to do it. So, I don't know. It's just a broken system. And so one of the concerns that I have, so while the Electoral College may not favor libertarians, unlimited spending because of Citizens United combined with the ability or the marketplace expansion to every state in the union as opposed to just a few wouldn't really help us that much. Secondly, the argument is always, oh, well, you just see them campaigning in high volume states like or high population states like California, New York, Illinois. Okay, well, that's different than just Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Florida. You know, so they're going to travel around and spread
around. I kind of see where they're coming with that, though. I mean, if you look at the maps, I mean, the only reason Indiana went blue in 08 was because of Indianapolis.
Right.
And a little bit of, you know, like, up north by Chicago.
Right.
So, for the most part, they probably wouldn't focus much on Indiana anyway, at least a Democrat or Republican, because they can pretty much guarantee they're going to get most of it.
Mm-hmm.
The same would go for many of the states out west. So, I mean, you would see maybe a little bit more of a branching out where you have – but I still think, for the most part, the reason these swing states are swing states is because really close to half of them go one way and half of them go another. Because you still have to win the entire state. So, yeah, you may see – I think you'd see more specifications is what you'd do. People wouldn't be campaigning in all of Ohio. They'd just be campaigning in the parts of Ohio they need where they can bank on the top left part of Ohio or the bottom right or something. So they'll just focus on the center. So, I mean, to an extent, yes, I agree with your point. But I don't see it as being a way to expand them. I don't see the consultant's point to a large extent, because they still have limited resources and they're not going to want to expand that much because they're still going to be not really viable. They still have to get the swing states.
All right. So before we move on to final predictions, let's talk about Richard Murdoch. Because by the way, guys, we're up over 100 subscribers on FeedBurner. So I know there are a lot more people than 100 people listening just because they listen on the website or they listen via.
There are more than 100 people listening to this?
There are 100 people who have the feed in their podcast burner, their iTunes.
Sweet.
But I know there are more than that listen. So thank you to everyone. We're almost at 300 people on the Facebook page.
Give us some suggestions on what you want us to do to improve it.
Or what
make
you
it
want
better.
Us, well, let's not
or
get
what
crazy.
You want us to talk about.
I'm like Creighton. Regular people shouldn't be involved in this kind of stuff.
Oh.
I was kidding. No, yeah, please go to the Facebook page, send us a message right on the wall. Give us some feedback.
We do like hearing from people. It helps
we
us
do,
keep going.
Unless it's John Muser yelling at me about memes, whatever you call it.
Or telling me that I'm completely wrong.
I didn't want to say anything, but it is pronounced meme.
John is right. You are always completely wrong.
I'm not always completely wrong.
He was totally wrong when he corrected me, but when it comes to you,
okay,
100%
okay.
Right. That guy is a brilliant man when talking about you. So go to wearelibertarians.com. Give us some feedback. Thank you for everybody that listens. Thank you to Rivertown Radio. Thank you for Liberty Osmosis. Thank you to Stitcher. Those are some of the places you can hear us, and as well as podcast.lpin.org. Go check out our podcasts. Search for them in iTunes. I've got a new Andy Horning podcast feed. There's a Rupert for Governor podcast feed, a Gary Johnson podcast feed. The LPIN one just has every podcast we put out. We're putting out several a week right now with speeches, debates. So check that stuff out. So it's not just this podcast that we produce. I work very hard to make sure that we put a lot out there. So now, for those of you who don't know, we are in Indiana. We record here in Indianapolis. Out of the Rupert for Governor headquarters for the next week. And then we have to find some new place to do the show. We have a beautiful podcast studio, and then next week, I don't know what we're going to have. So the Murdoch thing, I knew immediately when Richard Murdoch said, you know, he was weirdly crying as he said it, And I kind of didn't catch it at first, but 10 minutes after he said the equivalent, now this is not his intention, I will stick up for him, so don't write me hate mail, he basically said...
Don't write us any mail.
He basically said, you know, that a baby is a gift from God even when it happens in the case of rape. That's what he intended to say. What he said was... it's God's intentions when you get raped. That's what people heard.
Yeah.
And so...
And that's what Donnelly is spreading around.
Before we get too much into this, why do Republican politicians even answer rape questions?
Did you see the Colbert thing about it? Where it's basically like he had to erase his GOP days without a rape mention from 13 to 0.
Give me a break. The campaign managers and consultants and all these guys know what is smart to say and what's not smart to say. And I feel like there should be like a consensus among them to be like, if you're Republican, don't say the word rape.
Well,
don't answer rape questions. Take a no comment. There is less damage to be gotten from a no comment than when you talk about
the
rape.
The question was essentially, are you pro-life or pro-choice? Donnelly says, I'm pro-life. Andy Horning says, I'm pro-life. Richard Murdoch says, I'm pro-life, except in the case of, you know, when the mother's life, even in the case of rape and incest. And, you know, when a mother gets raped and has a baby, it's God's intention for that to happen. Whoa! An Indiana barrister is a blog here, and they had a great breakdown of like, all right, you can save this. Okay, now we're getting into, just stop. Ugh, you are toast. And I knew he was in trouble when the local media, all they tweeted about for the next 10 minutes of that debate was, I can't believe he said that. I can't believe. It's like, this guy is toast.
I can believe it.
So do you think that's lost in the election?
He's done.
So Donnelly.
Donnelly is your senator.
All the way.
At this point. I mean, according to the polls, they're, you know.
Yeah. He definitely dropped a ton. He tanked. But is this going to have an effect on the other races with the governor and president?
I think you're going to see double digits for Andy Horning. I'm hoping 34%. But I think you're going to – hey, that's a win, baby.
Yeah.
I mean, but I think you're going to see libertarians in that – I think you're going to see Andy poll really high on election day in that race because I hear nothing.
Great.
I hear nothing but I'm not voting for him. I'm voting for Andy Horning. I think you're going to see the same thing for Rupert in the governor's race. You know, he's worked his tail off for a year. I think it had the ability to kind of taint Mitt Romney and Mike Pence here in Indiana, but it didn't.
Okay.
No, because I mean, they tried. They immediately
they tried.
Immediately went into
CYA mode, yeah. And Mike Pence put out a statement. Yeah. Mike Pence and Jackie Walorski, who believe the exact same thing, basically threw Murdoch under the bus and said he needs to apologize. Now, if the Indiana Debate Commission had asked an abortion question in Thursday's debate, which was 2 days after the Murdoch comments, this could have still been going. But the Debate Commission, I don't think – I don't know this for sure. It's just my guess – they didn't want that to be the sum total of the coverage of the debate. And so they didn't ask it, which I was kind of surprised about. But, you know, given that a lot of state legislatures are changing abortion laws. But let's be honest, guys. Federally, nothing has or will change on abortion.
Never.
It's an issue that is used to inflame both sides and fundraise with. And especially at the federal level. It's not an important issue. It's not that it's an issue that shouldn't be discussed in an adult manner. But at this point, we can't have an adult discussion about it. And you certainly cannot have an adult discussion about this issue in 60 seconds or in a highly contested political race. I mean, what Murdoch tried to do was try to explain the existence of God, the creation of life, the government's role in women's health. And all of that he wrapped into the most divisive issue of our time, and he did it while crying. How did you think that was going to go? Like, all you had to do was say...
At least he didn't say he was chasing the American dream.
Like, he'd just say, I'm pro-life and move on. And then, then he could have pulled it out afterwards at the post-conference. At the end of the debate, he said he walked in there and expected high fives, and everybody in the room was white. Going, we got a problem here, boss. And he basically just repeated himself. There's on Think Progress, and Abdul locally here posted it, where he just sandbags himself even further. And then the next day in the press conference, you know, so he could have kind of saved it after that, and every story written about the debate and the quote would have included, well, here's what I actually meant, and if anybody misunderstood, I'm really sorry. Here's what I believe, da-da-da-da-da. Didn't do that. Totally failed that. His campaign let him down on that. And then the next day, in the press conference the next day to clarify his – he basically said, well, if you misheard me, I'm sorry. You're just wrong. I meant what I said. Okay. And he cried through that press conference too.
Do they even talk? I mean, I honestly don't understand. Why after the guy in
Aiken in Missouri. Aiken,
why didn't every time a Republican talks about rape or abortion or anything in this country, it always bites them in the ass because they don't know how to speak clearly. I mean, they have their speaking skills are that of like a fourth grader.
Because they know it's dangerous territory, so they get nervous about talking about it, and then they screw it up. And it's just short and sweet and simple. And how they didn't prep for this question, I mean, I didn't do debate prep with Andy, but I did debate prep with Rupert, and we talked about this issue. What would you say? Because this is an issue that is highly emotional, and you don't want to offend anyone, but you want to have an adult discussion about what you believe. He offended people.
Here's debate prep for Republicans talking about abortion. Shut your mouth. Next question.
You are a 60-year-old white man. Be quiet. You know? And my sister, God love her, was like, he's just a man. He shouldn't be talking about women's health anyways. What does he know? Women.
I hate that argument.
And I said, you know what? So let me ask you a question. Should only soldiers be allowed to talk about issues of war? Should only women be allowed to talk about funding for women's health? Because the fact is that if that's the case, then I'm not going to pay for it. If I can't get in on the discussion and have an opinion about how my money is being spent, then I'm not going to pay for it anymore. If public dollars are being used for anything, it's fair game for a discussion anyone.
That argument just, I think, harkens to the fundamental divide, which is why I don't think this issue will ever go away. Never. I mean, it will never go away because
Pandora's box has been opened.
Because on one side, you have people who are pro-life tend to be those who say that a baby's alive inside the womb.
And has a right to life.
The ones that are pro-choice tend to be, I mean, granted, this is a blanket statement, but for the most part, from what I've experienced, they tend to be that a fetus is not living until it's born.
It is a medical procedure.
And it is until there will – those two premises, bat heads. So that's why you can get the people who say that it's a women's health issue, and other people kind of think that's confusing and it pisses them off because they're like, no, it's an issue about life. You can make that argument, say that if anyone dies, if it was a guy, women can't talk about it because a guy died. I mean,
which is why libertarians are split on this issue.
Yeah,
it's 50-50.
Rupert's pro-choice. Horning's pro-life.
Right.
Johnson's pro-choice.
I don't ever see it going away.
Chard is pro-life.
Chard is pro-life.
Joe Ruiz is pro-life.
It's all about your worldview on when life starts.
Bottom line is that when you have a good economy, when you have more jobs being created, people have more money in their pocket from less taxes, they have better education through choice, through vocational programs and training, and you have adoption is made easier, then there's going to be less abortions. And we distract from the issues that can actually make the situation better if we don't get divided by this issue.
I know. I mean, seriously, there are people dying overseas right now. Our economy is falling off a cliff. And all we can talk about is the sentence structure of a Murdoch statement.
Right.
I mean, give me a break. There are more things that are important than things that aren't going to get done on a federal level ever. I mean, and that's just – that does get kind of under my skin during election season is how we talk about the stupidest stuff. Oh, he's a creationist. How could he be he believes in creationism. Like, give me a break.
Right.
I mean, there's the Obama has a kill list. Why are we not talking about the kill list?
We talked about this at the last show about the media. And we love it, and the media treats these debates like it's some sort of nerd Super Bowl, and they're just – it's like watching a race at Talladega. they think that if there isn't a wreck and somebody doesn't hit the fence, that it was the most boring debate of all time. But as soon as there's the big one and Richard Murdoch hits the wall, oh boy, we got to cover the wreck. I mean, it's not a NASCAR race. It's, well, it kind of is, because they should be wearing NASCAR patches
that
to show their corporate
awesome sponsors. I saw that picture. That would be beautiful.
But it's not a competition. It's a discussion of ideas. It's to inform voters. And we don't, the media doesn't treat it like that, and they should. And, you know, it just ticks me off. I mean, to watch the media after Rupert's debate in Fort Wayne, one of the candidates went first. They all went in and watched that press conference. They all left, walked down the hall, past Rupert as he's walking in to do his press conference. So they went back to their typewriters for 10 minutes, or computers. I guess they don't have typewriters anymore. But they do like Pez. And then when Rupert was done and we're walking back to the room, they're all walking back in. And it's like, you know what? I'm keeping a list. I'm remembering that.
And he's checking it twice, people.
I'm checking it twice, and I have a bowl full of jelly. Or wait, a belly. Never mind. Whatever.
Christmas fail.
It was a total Christmas fail. So,
how much time do we have left?
It's time to go. Oh, so man. let's talk about what's coming up for you guys.
Election day.
If
you want to help out, come get involved with the Libertarian Party on Election Day. We need help staffing polls, and we're having an election night party at the Pearl Street Pizza.
That's right.
Obviously, I wouldn't say this on many national. I wouldn't say this on many programs that go across the airwaves, whether it be the internet or the radio. But for this one in particular, I will say anyone who listens to this, it's okay if you vote. You're allowed to vote. Anyone on that listens to 93.1, they're not okay to vote, but you can vote.
But Creighton, by voting, aren't you forcing your opinion on others? Shouldn't you be a true voluntarist and not vote?
You said we were done with the episode.
This will take too long to answer.
I know, because basically it's going to be like last week where I'm going to be putting my finger right in Creighton's face and calling him a moron. Because if I saw somebody who said, Gary Johnson is my obvious choice for president, he's clearly the best, but I'm not going to vote for him or anyone because I'm not forcing my opinion on others. I'm like, well, then you are irrelevant. And the same goes for anybody who writes in Ron Paul's name in Indiana.
You called me a moron?
Yes.
When did I, for what? No, you said you called me a moron.
What?
Last week.
What, am I funny to you? No, I didn't call you a moron.
You just said that. That just came out of your mouth.
Then I was, if you were offended by my statements, I apologize.
Am I redundant funny?
I certainly did not intend for my statements to offend you.
Oh, Pepperidge Farm remembers.
Okay, Murdoch.
But if you write in Ron Paul's name, you're wasting your vote. Because Ron Paul is not a write-in candidate. He did not register in the state of Indiana to be a write-in candidate, and therefore your vote will not count for president. They don't even count the votes for Ron Paul as a write-in. They literally just say, oh, this person didn't vote for president. It's the same as writing in Mickey Mouse, and it drives me up the wall.
Our guest, my buddy that was the guest the other day, he voted Johnson.
Good. Very good. Goose?
Goose.
Okay. I still have to edit that podcast. He wanted me to basically edit out the whole podcast.
No,
and
he said one particular part.
Okay. Well, I forget
what
it was.
Save it for a rainy day.
Yeah. I've been saving it. We have one long-lost podcast. You may notice podcast 16 is not in the list. It will be someday. We recorded it months ago. So please, get out and vote. It's okay to vote. It's okay to force your opinion on others. That's what voting's all about. They're inflicting their opinion on you, so fight back.
Yeah. Exactly. But seriously, come help out on Election Day.
Please.
Come to the party.
At Rupert's headquarters at 129 East Market Street on Sunday from 3 to 7, we're all going to be here handing out materials, giving out Slate cards. I did my first graphic design job and created the Slate pieces for State Party.
It's really nice, by the way.
Thank you very much. I'm very proud of myself.
I'm proud of you.
I broke my right arm patting myself on the back.
Wow.
And then on Tuesday's the big day. We need people to stand out at their precincts and pass out materials and ask people to vote for the Libertarian candidates. And then at Pearl Street Pizza in downtown Indianapolis from 6 o'clock on, we're going to have a pretty cool party. It's a great place. Great place. So,
working the polls really does help.
It really does. I will tell you a story. I worked in 2004 on a statehouse campaign. It was unfortunately a Republican that I no longer get along with. And I worked at the polling place passing out materials from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. in snowing and rain and cold conditions. He won by 14 votes. In my precinct, I increased the vote totals over 120 votes because I was standing outside of that polling place passing out materials. Yeah. So it makes a big difference for candidates. And you'd be surprised how many people are standing there going, wait a minute, what is a libertarian?
Yeah.
So it's a great outreach event when people are totally open to hear about it. So
yeah, it really makes an impact with the smaller races, too. Like, I don't,
and then
some people might not know who they're voting for state house.
Right.
My last my last push this week or upcoming week, for the election day on the 4th or on the 5th, I'm sorry, at on campus, Yale is doing an Obamney event where we're basically pointing out that they're the same guy. And that's kind of like, that was a last minute kind of thing that we got together, but we're doing it. We have a big old cutout with the face, like the George Bush Obama face that looks the same. This one's Obama and Romney looks the same. And so we're going to spend all day telling people that Obama and Romney both suck. So it should be fun.
All right, cool. Well, thank you to you guys for being here on the podcast. I love you both.
So negative.
In a platonic way. Thank you to Brian Keith Wallen for providing our music. Go to briankeithwallen.com. Check out Brian Wallen official page on Facebook and like his music. He was gracious to come out to the Gary Johnson event that we had in Shelbyville. 150 people came out to Shelbyville, played there. It was excellent. So thank you, and we will see you next week.
Good evening. Edwin S. Simon reporting. NBS News has obtained Pentagon documents that show our neighbor to the north, the sovereign nation of Canada, has embarked on a military program aimed at the United States. Canada, known for ages as a polite and clean country, has, under a socialist majority, undertaken a massive military buildup on its border with the United States.
I don't like Canada. It's freezing cold.
Canada owns more of the U.S. than any other country.
The Canadians. They walk among us. William Shatner. Michael J. Fox. Monty Hall. Mike Myers. Alex Trebek. All of them Canadians. All of them here.
Is Canadian Prime Minister Clark MacDonald a member of a satanic cult?
Most of Canada's vast military technology has been built and supplied by the United States. The Canadian National Tower in Toronto, erected to transmit nuclear attack warnings from radar stations in northern Canada, is now solely in Canadian hands. It is the height of six American football fields, or five Canadian football fields, as if Canadian football really counts. What would be the psychological motivation to erect a huge, long, rigid shaft?
First of all, there is no Canadian culture. I've never read any Canadian literature. And when have you ever heard anyone say, honey, let's stay in and order some Canadian food?
This podcast is produced by What is a Hoosier Productions.